You know that feeling when you check your monthly credit card statement and it just looks like a graveyard of $20 charges?
Oh, yeah, the subscription fatigue is very real.
Right. You've got your cloud storage, your music app, and lately, an absolute mountain of AI subscriptions. It is like we have all been quietly corralled into these digital toll booths.
Yeah, it's the modern ecosystem trap, really.
Exactly. Every time you want to write an email or, generate an image or even just play a song in your living room, some tech giant is standing there with their hand out.
We happily traded our convenience for control over the last decade, and well, now we're paying the rent on a dozen different walled gardens just to get through a normal workday.
And that exhaustion is exactly why I couldn't stop reading through our source material for today's deep dive. We are pulling apart the May 16th, 2026 edition of the Tech and Morning Tech newsletter.
It's a massive roundup.
It really is. It covers the day's biggest headlines, spanning AI, hardware, and some pretty intense corporate drama. But as we were organizing these sources, a very clear through line emerged.
Yeah, it's all about independence.
Right.
If you look closely at this entire newsletter, from the everyday consumer trying to save a buck, all the way up to trillion-dollar titans like Apple, everyone in 2026 is fighting tooth and nail to break free from monopolies.
Just trying to escape those single supplier dependencies.
Okay, let's unpack this and
Yeah.
let's start right at the ground level with your wallet.
Always a good place to start.
Because the first story here is about a platform called OneMin.ai, and it is attacking that subscription fatigue head on. Because, like, if you want the best AI tools right now, the math is brutal.
Oh, absolutely.
You're paying $20 a month for ChatGPT Plus, another $20 for Claude Pro, and another $20 for Gemini Advanced. That is $60 a month, $720 a year.
Which is a massive overhead for a freelancer or a student or really anyone just trying to keep their skills relevant in this market.
Right. So OneMin.ai comes along and they are offering a lifetime deal for $80. One single payment.
Yeah. And for that, you get a unified dashboard giving you access to OpenAI's GPT-4 and GPT-5.4, Anthropic's Claude 3.5, Google's Gemini Pro, Meta's Llama 3.3, plus image generators like DALL-E 3 and Midjourney.
All in one place.
You pay $80 once and you can jump between any of them depending on the task. Now, I have to play the skeptic here.
Fair enough.
I've seen these lifetime deals before. Usually they vanish in 6 months and take your money with them. How on earth are they giving away official API access for a one-time fee when the creators of those models are charging monthly?
It's the right question to ask for sure. And the answer is buried in the fine print. What OneAI is doing is essentially acting as a bulk buyer.
Okay.
They buy enterprise-level API access from OpenAI and Google, and then they route your requests through their dashboard. So the output you get is identical in quality to the original versions.
But there's a catch, right?
Yeah, there are hard query limits.
Ah, so they're banking on the fact that most people aren't actually power users.
Precisely. For their advanced business plan, which is what this $80 deal covers, you are limited to around 1,000 queries per month.
Okay, 1,000.
Yeah. If you are a developer running massive, complex data analysis scripts all day, you will burn through that cap in a week. But for the average user drafting emails, summarizing PDFs, or, generating a few images,
It's plenty.
1,000 queries is more than enough. You break even on this $80 investment in just 2 months.
The newsletter does point out a caveat about future-proofing, though. Your access to current models, even up to GPT-5.4, is covered. But when GPT-6 eventually drops, the terms of service indicate you might have to pay an upgrade fee.
Which makes sense from a business perspective, right? I mean, they can't subsidize unknown future costs forever.
Still, breaking even in 2 months and stopping that monthly $72 bleed is a huge win for personal financial independence. Just a quick public service announcement for you listening, though. The newsletter explicitly warns that because this deal is so popular, there are clone sites popping up. Only use the official site, or you will end up handing your credit card to a scammer.
A very necessary warning. And, while OneMin.ai is offering financial freedom, there's another story in here offering geographical freedom.
Oh, the Codex update.
Yes, OpenAI just released Codex Remote Access on the ChatGPT mobile app for iOS and Android.
I read this and immediately thought, this is like having a junior developer in your pocket while you're sitting at a cafe.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. Until now, serious AI-assisted coding required you to be tethered to your desk.
Right, because you need your setup.
Exactly. You had to be staring at your IDE, your integrated development environment, basically your heavy-duty software workbench where you write and test code on a laptop or desktop.
Because you can't exactly load up a massive multi-gigabyte code base onto a smartphone and start refactoring it while waiting for a latte.
Right. But this new app update changes that. The source explains that you can leave Codex running on your Mac, and they noted Windows support is coming soon, and you monitor everything from your phone.
That's wild.
You can view the status of running projects, review the code it's writing, and even approve or reject changes.
And the newsletter mentioned you can also switch the models Codex is using, right? Like jumping from GPT 5.5 to Claude or Gemini right from your phone screen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But the most elegant technical detail here is the bandwidth requirement. You don't actually need high-speed Wi-Fi on your phone to make this work.
Wait, if it's dealing with a huge code base, shouldn't it need a massive data connection to sync all those files?
You would think so, but it's
Yeah.
not transmitting the code base to your phone at all.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, the heavy lifting, the compiling, the file manipulation is happening locally on your Mac back at your home or office. Your phone is simply communicating with OpenAI servers to send basic text commands and receive text updates.
So it's just telemetry.
Exactly.
So it's essentially just a highly sophisticated remote control.
That's exactly what it is. Even if you drop down to a weak 3G cellular connection, you can still manage the project.
Wow.
If Codex encounters a fork in the road, say it finds two different ways to rewrite a security function, it pings your phone. You review the short text snippet, tap the better method, and the Mac back home keeps working.
That completely unchains the developer from the desk.
Yeah,
But we do need to bring up a massive security warning the newsletter highlighted about this.
oh, definitely.
Never use public Wi-Fi when you're connecting to Codex Mobile.
Yes. You might only be sending telemetry, but those commands are the literal keys to your proprietary software.
Right.
Sending them over an unsecured coffee shop network is incredibly dangerous. Independence requires vigilance.
For sure. And, you know, that idea of breaking out of the usual constraints naturally brings us to what's happening in the broader industry. It's not just individuals breaking free.
No, not at all.
We are seeing a shift where hyper-focused underdog companies are proving they can shatter the dominance of these do-it-all tech giants.
This is perhaps one of the most significant trends in the 2026 landscape. For the longest time, the assumption was that companies like Google or OpenAI, with their infinite compute budgets, would just build a monolithic AI that was best at everything.
Like a Swiss Army knife.
Right. Text, audio, video, code one ring to rule them all. But the data tells a different story entirely.
It really does, especially when you look at Runway. They just dropped their Gen 4.5 video generation model, and the stats on the independent video arena leaderboard are staggering.
They really are.
Runway's Gen 4.5 took the number one spot with an Elo score of 1247.
And just for context for you listening, an Elo score is the same matchmaking ranking system they use in competitive chess.
Right.
It means Gen 4.5 didn't just score high in a vacuum, it consistently beat the other models in blind, head-to-head comparisons by human judges.
And it didn't just win, it crushed the competition. It beat Google's VO3, which scored 1198, and it completely left OpenAI's Sora 2 Pro in the dust at 1089.
Yeah, not even close.
Now, Runway is a startup. They are backed by SoftBank and NVIDIA, sure, but compared to Google, they are David fighting Goliath, and David just won.
He really did.
But I need to understand the mechanics here. The videos look prettier, the camera pans are cinematic, but why is this a massive deal for anyone listening who isn't trying to shoot a movie?
Because to understand why Runway won, you have to look beneath the pixels. It's not just that the lighting is better,
Okay.
it's that Gen 4.5 fundamentally understands the physics of our reality better than Google or OpenAI's models do.
When you say it understands physics,
Right.
It's still just predicting the next frame of pixels, though, right?
It is, but the underlying patterns it has learned represent actual physical laws. The newsletter highlights two specific benchmarks here: realistic physics and cause and effect.
Give me an example.
Well, if you prompt Gen 4.5 with a bouncing ball, it doesn't just draw a circle moving up and down. It calculates the natural deformation of the rubber when it hits the ground, the spin, and the decaying momentum of the bounce. And if you prompt it with someone dropping a glass, it knows the glass must shatter upon impact and the shards must scatter logically. Sora 2, for all its power, still struggles with those fundamental rules. It might have the glass bounce or melt into the floor.
So, if it knows how glass shatters before it even draws the frame, it's not really just a video generator anymore, it's a physics engine.
And that is the bigger picture. Runway isn't just making a tool for filmmakers. They are building what the industry calls world models.
World models.
Yeah. If you can accurately simulate the physical world gravity, momentum, cause and effect, you can use that virtual environment to train robotics and autonomous vehicles safely before putting them in the real world.
That makes total sense.
By focusing entirely on mastering video, Runway built a better physical simulator than the tech giants who are trying to do everything at once.
The underdog wins through intense specialization. And we're seeing that exact same underdog strategy play out in the hardware space right now with Bose.
Hardware independence is just as crucial as software independence. Consumer lock-in is a massive issue in smart home devices.
Right, and Bose has just revived its lifestyle brand to tackle that directly. They've introduced the Lifestyle Ultra Series to go head-to-head with Sonos.
The heavy hitter.
Yeah. You've got the Ultra Speaker at $299, the soundbar at $1099, and the subwoofer at $899. For years, Sonos has dominated the premium home audio market because of their closed ecosystem.
Once you're in, you're in.
Exactly. Once you buy one Sonos speaker, you are trapped.
Yeah.
They only talk to other Sonos speakers. But
yeah.
Bose is offering an escape hatch, attacking Sonos on two fronts, acoustic hardware and software openness.
Let's look at the hardware advantage first. The new Bose Lifestyle Ultra Speaker is $299, which is the exact same price as the competing Sonos Era 100. But the Bose speaker includes an up-firing driver.
So it's pointing a speaker straight at the ceiling. How much of a difference does that actually make?
A massive one. By physically bouncing sound off your ceiling, it creates the foundation for true spatial audio.
Oh, I see.
It makes a relatively small speaker sound immersive because the sound is literally coming at you from above and around you, not just straight out of the front grill.
And Sonos doesn't have that.
No, the Sonos Era 100 doesn't have that mechanical capability. But the hardware is only half the battle. The real blow for independence is the connectivity.
Right, because Bose didn't try to build a new walled garden to compete with Sonos's walled garden. They embraced open standards like Apple AirPlay 2 and Google Cast, which means, if I'm understanding this correctly, true multi-brand grouping.
Yes, exactly. You can buy the Bose speaker for your living room, and if you have an older, totally different brand of smart speaker in your kitchen, you can group them together via AirPlay or Google Cast.
That is so convenient.
They will play the same music perfectly in sync.
Yeah.
You have the independence to choose the best speaker for each room, regardless of the logo on the front.
I love that approach. It's a company saying, you know, our product is so good, we don't need to lock you in a cage to force you to use it.
Precise.
But it's easy enough for Bose to declare independence by adopting open software. What happens when the ecosystem you're trying to break out of is owned by Apple?
That's where it gets messy.
Yeah. Because if consumers and startups are fighting for independence, the trillion-dollar tech giants are practically going to war over it.
It's the trillion-dollar decoupling. The scale of the corporate maneuvering in this newsletter is really fascinating.
Let's start with the frenemy drama of the decade. OpenAI is preparing to sue Apple. A partnership that was supposed to redefine consumer AI on the iPhone is falling apart after just 2 years.
It didn't take long.
No. Reading through the details, it really feels like moving into a roommate's house to save on rent, only to find out they've hidden all your stuff in the attic and started a competing business right there in the living room.
That is a surprisingly accurate way to frame the legal friction. According to the reports, OpenAI's lawyers are exploring a formal lawsuit or a breach of contract notice.
And their grievances are extensive. They feel ChatGPT was made a second-class citizen on iOS and macOS. Apple heavily pushed its own rival, Apple Intelligence, right alongside it.
Yeah.
But the biggest issue seems financial. OpenAI expected this partnership to drive millions of Apple users to sign up for their $20 a month ChatGPT Plus subscription, and the conversion rate was abysmal.
Which brings up the reality of corporate contracts versus corporate expectations. OpenAI's frustration is valid from a business standpoint. Apple absolutely prioritized their in-house Apple Intelligence.
Of course they did.
They essentially used OpenAI as a stopgap, a fallback option for queries their own AI couldn't handle, rather than making it the core brain of the iPhone.
But frustration isn't illegal. Do they actually have a case for breach of contract?
Well, that depends entirely on the specific ink on the page. Apple had no fundamental obligation to promote or advertise ChatGPT unless there were explicit guaranteed subscriber targets written into that contract.
And Apple doesn't usually do that.
No. Knowing Apple's historical negotiating power, it is highly unusual for them to agree to guaranteed external subscriber quotas. OpenAI will have a very hard time proving a breach of contract in court just because they didn't get the marketing push they hoped for.
So the newsletter predicts this will likely end in an out-of-court settlement by the summer of 2026. Apple might pay a lump sum or agree to slightly better positioning in iOS 27 just to make the headache go away.
That's the most probable outcome. But the deeper takeaway is that this model of partnership, where a platform holder actively competes with the third-party partner they are hosting, is fundamentally broken. You cannot depend on your biggest competitor for your distribution.
Which brings us to the ultimate irony of today's deep dive. Apple is the undisputed king of the closed ecosystem. They lock everyone else in, and yet right now, they are desperately trying to gain their own independence from TSMC.
The Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, yes. They're currently testing Intel's 18AP process to manufacture low-end and legacy chips for the iPhone, iPad, and Mac, targeting mass production somewhere around 2027 to 2029.
But Apple has relied on TSMC for basically 100% of their silicon for years. They are joined at the hip. Why are they suddenly flirting with Intel?
Geopolitics and leverage. Relying entirely on a single supplier located in Taiwan is an unacceptable risk for a company of Apple's size.
Right.
Any disruption in the China-Taiwan dynamic could halt Apple's entire global supply chain overnight. They need a secondary source to survive.
And Intel is the escape route because they offer domestic United States manufacturing.
Exactly.
They've invested over $100 billion in factory modernization, and they are heavily supported by government subsidies spanning both the Biden and Trump administrations. But, I mean, Intel has been stumbling for years.
They have.
They've missed production deadlines. They've lost market share. Can they actually pull this off for Apple?
That is the big gamble. But what's fascinating here is that Intel does have one massive technological advantage that Apple wants. And that's their advanced Foveros 3D packaging technology.
3D packaging, how does that work compared to normal chips?
Think of traditional chip design like a sprawling suburb. All the different components, the memory, the processor, the graphics, are laid out flat next to each other on the silicon.
Right.
Takes up space, and data has to travel further horizontally between components. Foveros is like building a high-rise skyscraper. Intel has figured out how to stack these microscopic chip components vertically on top of each other.
Oh, wow.
It saves massive amounts of space, reduces power consumption, and allows data to travel incredibly fast up and down the stack.
So Apple wants that high-rise architecture for their devices, but they aren't handing Intel the keys to the kingdom just yet.
No, Apple's strategy here is very cautious. They are testing Intel with low-end and legacy chips first, older architecture.
Risking the waters.
Yeah. TSMC has decades of flawless execution and unmatched quality control. Because of that, Apple's flagship silicon, the bleeding-edge A series for the new iPhones and the M series for the MacBooks, will almost certainly stay with TSMC for a long time.
So, by giving Intel a piece of the pie on the older chips, Apple diversifies its geopolitical risk, gets access to 3D stacking tech, and gains massive negotiating leverage over TSMC for future pricing.
It's a brilliant multi-year play for independence.
It really is. But we have to address the elephant in the room regarding all this decoupling. Breaking out of unified ecosystems, whether it's switching AI models, coding remotely, or diversifying supply chains, creates a massive surface area for things to go wrong.
The hidden cost of independence is security. When you exist inside a lockdown ecosystem, the platform provider handles the security. When you break out and start connecting disparate tools, you are responsible for patching the holes.
And the security roundup in today's newsletter is a stark reminder of that reality. We have three major alerts. First, the TanStack attack, which actually resulted in OpenAI losing two employee devices.
And we should clarify what a TanStack attack actually means, because it's terrifying for developers.
Yeah.
TanStack is a highly popular suite of open source tools that developers use to build web applications. A supply chain attack like this means hackers compromise the core open source software itself. So when developers at companies like OpenAI legitimately downloaded or updated TanStack for their own projects, they unknowingly pulled malicious code right into their internal systems. It's like a poisoned water supply.
Wow. So the attackers don't even have to break down OpenAI's front door. They just poison the materials OpenAI brings inside.
Exactly.
The newsletter specifically reminds everyone, do not ignore your macOS updates, as Apple has just pushed patches to mitigate this.
The second major alert is an active exploitation of a Microsoft Exchange vulnerability listed as CVE 2026-42897.
What does that string of numbers actually translate to for an IT manager?
It translates to a remote code execution flaw. It means that if you manage a Microsoft Exchange email server and you haven't patched this, a hacker doesn't need a password or a phishing email to get in.
That's
very bad. They can send a specially crafted command over the internet and take total control of your email server from the other side of the planet. They can read everything, alter routing, or use it to pivot deeper into your company's network. Patch it immediately.
Terrifying. And finally, Anthropic's internal Mythos security team just discovered a slew of new macOS bugs, which, again, reinforces the need to keep your systems updated. All of this brings us right back to our earlier conversation about Codex Mobile.
Yes.
The ability to control your Mac from your phone while at a cafe is an incredible freedom.
But if you are using public Wi-Fi to send those telemetry commands, you are transmitting access to your proprietary code over an unsecured network where anyone with a basic packet sniffer can intercept your traffic.
Just don't do it.
Right. Use a VPN, use your cellular data, but do not code on the free coffee shop Wi-Fi.
So stepping back and looking at the whole board today, it is a massive shift in how we interact with technology. We've seen OneMin.ai offering a way to free your wallet from endless subscriptions. We've got Codex Mobile freeing developers from their desks.
Yep.
Runway proving that a focused startup can beat Google and OpenAI at their own physics game. Bose using open standards to shatter the closed speaker ecosystem. And Apple trying to break its dependency on TSMC. The through line is undeniable. Competition is returning, and it's yielding better prices, higher quality, and more choices.
It is a net positive for the user right now, but if we project this trend forward, it raises a rather provocative question about the future of our digital lives.
What kind of question?
Well, if every single company, user, and device achieves total independence, if we completely dismantle all these unified ecosystems, do we eventually reach a point of total fragmentation? In our rush to avoid being locked into one tech giant's walled garden, are we just creating a future where we have to constantly manage 50 different disconnected tools that refuse to natively talk to each other? Are we simply trading the financial exhaustion of the toll booth for the mental exhaustion of 1,000 mismatched puzzle pieces?
Trading the toll booth for the puzzle piece. That is incredibly thought-provoking, because as much as I hate checking that credit card statement and seeing a dozen $20 charges, I don't know if I have the energy to manually connect 50 independent apps, manage a dozen API keys, and track open source vulnerabilities every morning just to start my workday.
It's a lot of work.
It is. We demand the freedom, but deep down, we still crave the convenience. It is a fascinating balancing act, and one we will definitely keep tracking as these tools evolve. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Take a look at your own workflows today. Where are you too dependent, and where might a little independence save you some time? Or some money. We'll be back next time to explore another stack of sources. Until then, stay curious.